Night Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear our voices, you're exactly where you need to be. She is Karen Frazier. I am Rick Hale. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. I just want to give really quick props to Paravisions, the show that's on before us. Those guys are great. I really like their show. I like to tune in, and they're a lot of fun. So, welcome to the underground. So, Karen.
Yes.
What do we have this week for our listeners?
Do you mean like a guest or just yes. in general?
No, our guest.
I know, I'm just teasing. So we're sort of in the middle of our go round of the Pacific Northwest and all of the great people involved in the paranormal here. We're talking to a guy that I see in a lot of different places. We wind up speaking at a lot of different conferences and things, and that's Joe Teeples. He's the author of Ghostology 101 and Pacific Northwest Haunts.
Mm. I really like the name Ghostology 101.
You know, yeah.
Sounds like a class that I could actually sit through. So, before we started the show, Karen, you were talking a little bit that you guys have, some private homes coming up. We were talking a little bit about private homes, investigating hauntings in a private home. You know, what exactly are your thoughts? Do you prefer doing private homes or do you prefer doing, like a public building?
Well, they're totally different things. I think in private homes, you actually have to know what you're doing, and you actually have to have some integrity in what you do and integrity in your evidence and things, so you don't scare the crap out of the homeowners.
Yeah.
So I think that I just really feel like they're such different types of investigations. They shouldn't be. You should practice in the public places.
Yeah.
But I actually like the private homes.
I do too. I've actually gone into a few private homes where they've had people before them, and it's funny because it's like I actually hear more horror stories about other groups than, you know, what's actually going on in the house. And you know, you talk about integrity, and I think that's really important. I've actually heard stories of these groups going into homes, and they're you know, using harsh language in front of the people's kids, and they're, you know, yelling at the top of their lungs at, yes, you know, something that may or may not even be there. And I just think that when you're in a private home, you're not just representing your group. You're representing an entire field of research that, you know, people are gaining a lot more interest in these days, but they're still sort of leery of. So I just think it's something that, you know, you need to be mindful of when you do these private homes.
Absolutely. I hate to use the word professionalism because I think it's tossed around a lot about something that's a hobby.
Sure.
But as cliche as it is, and you hear it a lot, oh, we're the professional, you know, you're not necessarily a professional ghost hunter, but you need to be, comport yourself in a way when you're in a private home that is a professional manner, that is a business-like, maybe, yeah, is a better word.
I mean, we're not talking about, you know, going in there dressed in a suit and tie, you know, like we're the Office of Scientific Investigation and Research up in Canada, but you need to be mindful of, this is this person's house, and even the spirits that may be in that house, that's to them, that's still their house. So just be mindful and just be nice to the homeowner, their family, and, you know, don't be quite so violently aggressive.
Don't be yourself, man. No.
Yeah, no. And, you know, being like, you know, violently aggressive and you're speaking to the spirits that are in the house. Cause I've actually found that in many, many times in a private home setting that spirits will hide and they'll wait. Mm-hmm. Just to see what kind of a person you are.
That's right, because they're used to their people there. In public places, there are all kinds of people coming through all the time.
Right.
In private homes, that's less so. And so I understand. The other thing I think is really important, I think with all investigations, but definitely with private home investigations or private business investigations, is your integrity of your evidence, that you really need to be careful about what you present to the homeowners. Mm-hmm. Because what you're telling them is a very impactful thing. We talked about this with Neil last week a little bit, didn't we, with our guest Neil McNeil.
Right. Great guest, by the way.
Yeah, he was awesome. He's coming back. Great. So, but you have to be really careful because what you present to the homeowners is a really impactful thing. Yeah. And if you tell somebody who's already scared, you have a ghost in your house and here's an EVP, and it's really the guy, you know, your tech dude zipping up his zipper.
Yeah.
Or something, that they're going to be scared of that, yeah, if you don't handle things properly or if you don't have the integrity of your evidence. So,
right. Well, I think another really important thing to remember is that as an investigator and a psychical researcher, you're there to do three things: observe, document, and report. If you go in there with the with two different kind of preconceived notions, if you go in there with the preconceived notion that the place is haunted, then you're going to experience all kinds of stuff. But if you go in there and you're like, I'm going to disprove this place, I hate using the term debunk because it's so misused these days. If you go in there with that kind of attitude too, you kind of might make the homeowner feel like they're lying to you. So if you want to have the true objectivity, observe, document, and report. That's your job. That's what you're there to do.
And interview the heck out of the people before you go into the home. When I say we have some private clients, what that means is that we have some, we have to interview and we have to do all of that stuff. It's not like they're going to call us and we're going to show up at their house.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like Ghostbusters, you know, you're running in with a unlicensed nuclear power generator on your back, so.
No, and it's usually a pretty comprehensive interview, and sometimes some of the questions are really sensitive. So the other thing that's really important when you're dealing with private clients is something that the group that you used to be with was very big on, and that's the confidentiality.
Yes, we were very, mm-hmm. They're very big on that. And I think that's important because if you go into somebody's house and the next thing you know, you're putting their pictures all over Facebook and you got videos and whatever on YouTube. Even if they didn't sign something and you accidentally catch their image, say in a photograph that's sitting on the mantle, you can actually still be sued for that. So it's something that you really need to take into consideration. There's nothing wrong with confidentiality, but at the same time, there's nothing wrong with sharing your evidence because you may catch that evidence that actually opens the eyes of the mainstream scientific community to what it is that we really do.
Right. And I've asked a lot of groups this, and a lot of them look at me in shock when I ask this. But I also think that if you are going to be going into somebody's home, this is a really important thing. So new groups out there, listen up. You need to have them sign a disclaimer.
Yes, absolutely. You don't want to get sued, and you don't want to make anybody look like a chucklehead. Even especially the ones where you go in there with the preconceived notion that I'm going to disprove this haunting, because you actually kind of sort of make the person either a liar, a crazy person, or a person who has a problem with drugs and alcohol. These people call you. They don't know what's going on. Observe, document, report. That's all you got to do.
Yep, there you go. So real quickly, this coming weekend, I'm going to be not this weekend, but the weekend of the 28th, I'm going to be at the Klondike.
Great.
Yeah, it's a class that our friend William Becker from Paranormal Insights and West Coast Ghost Hunters is doing, and then it's followed by an investigation class. I'm not sure if he still has space, but you can learn about it at paranormalinsights.net. The Klondike is in St. Helens, Oregon, so I would suggest if you're in the Pacific Northwest, you don't walk, you run to this place, because it's a crazy awesome place.
Yeah. No, I liked having William on the show. I thought he was a really great guest. And although I've never worked with him, with him being a medium, if you say he's legit, I'm going to say I believe that.
He's too legit to quit. Yeah, no, he's. I adore William. I can never say enough good things about William. So there you go. Hey, it's quarter after, so that means we need to head to break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to Joe Teeples, who is the author of Ghostology 101 and Pacific Northwest Haunts. So come back, Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio.
Stick around.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com, a proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at Paranormal UG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey, and welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We are your hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale. Tonight joining us is going to be Joe Teeples, author.
Not going to be, he's here.
He's here, yes, he is here. Joe is the, his first book was Ghostology 101, and his second book is going to be Pacific Northwest Haunts. And Joe, welcome to the Underground.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Thanks for coming on. So I have just this really quick question. I was looking at your Amazon account, or rather your Amazon bio the other day, and I have this one question. How understanding is your wife really?
Oh, she is really, really understanding. When we did a conference at Fort Townsend, we were running through the hotel there, the Palace Hotel, and somehow the guy said, well, you're sitting in the most haunted room. And we said, well, let's go check it out. So we went in there, and I knocked on the door and let her know that I was coming in. And she was, in bed reading a book, and about 15 ghost hunters came in and started taking pictures all over the place and getting orbs and seeing and eyeing. And she just kind of nodded and said, yeah, thanks for warning me.
Well, the paranormal spouse is a very unique one. If they don't participate in it, and I've actually never met your wife, yet I see you lots of places, and you've only met my husband once, and you see me lots of places, so they know what's that, Joe?
We're high school sweethearts, and the interesting thing about the Palace Hotel is that we had rented out the entire hotel except for one guy who snuck in there. And so here it is, 2 o'clock in the morning, we're running up and down the stairs with all of this equipment, and he does not understand what is going on. Finally, he opened up the door, and as soon as the door creaked open, about 3 people spun, and all these flash photographers went off, and this poor guy standing there in his underwear yelling at people because he's trying to sleep, and they thought it was a ghost, and it's just a tourist. Darn it.
Now, the Palace Hotel is in Port Townsend, Washington, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's a great place.
Really? And that's one that doesn't get a lot of press.
No, usually up at Port Townsend, the Manresa Castle gets a lot more press. We found more activity at the Palace Hotel. As a matter of fact, if you stop by the Palace Hotel, and they don't advertise it, they're pretty quiet about it, but they are ghost hunter friendly. And if you ask them to see the handwritten notes of people that have stayed there, they keep it in a 3-ring binder behind the desk. And you can take that over to the table in the lobby and just sit there and leaf through all the things that people have seen, the apparitions that they've seen, the sounds that they've heard, and it's all documented with their name and where they came from.
Interesting.
Very cool. So that's going to have to be one I'm going to have to check out, clearly.
So, Joe, my question for you is this. Now, according to the information that you sent us, is that you've been doing this since 1972. That's about 10 years longer than I've been doing it. What exactly is it that sparked your interest in this most rarefied fields of research?
Well, when I started off as a young boy in high school, we lived on an old creaky farm back in Michigan that was a centennial farm. It was over 100 years old. And I used to play checkers with an old man out there in the barn. And finally, I never gave it any mind. I thought it was just a guy from the neighborhood who was playing checkers. And finally, my parents found a photograph of the original inhabitants of the thing. And I looked at the black and white picture in front of the farmhouse, and I said, well, that's the guy.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Awesome.
It can't be that's the ghost. And so I was kind of chastised for making things up. And so I went, a couple weeks later, a month later, I was out in the barn, and I was playing checkers. I saw the guy. He was out there. I wanted to play checkers with him. And so I asked him. I looked at him and says, are you a ghost? And he looked at me, and he shook his head, and he said, there's no such thing as ghosts. And he walked on the corner, and that was the last time that I saw him.
That's an awesome story. Well, you know, what's really funny is we had Neil McNeil on last week, Joe, and that was one of the things he says is that a lot of people probably have encounters with ghosts and don't even realize that they do, because a lot of times apparitions are solid and look like real people.
That's right, and it's something that I always tell ghost hunting groups is, you know, always take pictures and document and find something. But the big thing is ghost hunting groups are sitting on the biggest secret in the universe that everyone wants to know about, the fact that there is life after death. And yes, what we're looking for now is scientific evidence. I mean, I didn't have any evidence or proof that this guy was a real ghost, and I didn't know at that point how to document it. So it was just an interesting thing, and then from there I went on investing all sorts of paranormal activity. I joined the Fortean Society and traveled around the world looking at different places. So it just kind of built that up. I'm still looking for the solid, rock-hard evidence that says, yes, this guy's a ghost. I think we should give them name tags.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm all for that.
That works. So let's talk about Pacific Northwest haunts a little bit, because people tend to think that because of where we live, which is, you know, compared to the rest of the country, relatively new, that we don't have a lot of haunted places. And I say that is just absolute poppycock. And you, of all people who have written Pacific Northwest haunts, knows that it is. So talk about some of the haunted places in the Pacific Northwest, Joe.
Well, there's all kinds of them, and my goal with Pacific Northwest Haunts was to provide a synopsis of what was going on and an address where people can go to and find the place, as opposed to saying, well, there's a rainbow house in Seattle that's haunted.
Oh, yeah.
For example, the Georgetown Castle, it took me a year to find out where Georgetown Castle was, because there is a building in Georgetown that kind of looks like a castle, but that's not the place. And I kept asking people, where is it? Can you give me an address? And people said, well, geez, I really know. It's our club. We keep that secret. We can't release that. All sorts of information on that. And so my goal in this book, Pacific Northwest Haunts, was really to develop a field guide. And then I registered it with the Library of Congress, so it's there forever. And it's a tome that people can use to build on. So take that beginning information, go to the place, do your own research, document it, and then, you know, let's build on this thing, because eventually we're going to find something.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's that's kind of what we were talking about before. It's, you know, with doing investigations, you know, like I said, and I can't say it enough, it's you're there to observe, document, and report. And, you know, one of these days, one of us is going to find that incontrovertible proof that shows the entire world that, yes, there is life after death. Yes, your intelligence will continue after the death of your body. So very important. But and that's what I like about the Pacific Northwest Haunts, is that you do give the addresses of the places
I
for
know.
People to go. I just want to ask this, this though. Do you think that might, I don't know, kind of tick off the people who work and live in these places?
Most of the people that I've stumbled on they're as curious as we are. There are some places where, when I wrote the book, for example, up at Port Townsend, there's a nice bed and breakfast that is very, very, very haunted, a lot of activity. And a few years ago, it was sold to a religious group. They're very Christian, good, and they just don't believe in ghosts, mm-hmm. even though they cannot explain the material. And they flat out said, we'd like it if you would take us out of your book. And so you won't find them in the book. Mm-hmm. But you can still stay there, but they're not ghost hunter friendly. So in my books, I usually put in the ones that are ghost hunter friendly. No private stories, so people are banging on doors and windows and that type of stuff. So I usually do check on that. I'm working on another book now, which is Haunted Hotels, and that's going to be all the haunted hotels across the nation. And I've
found cool.
Yeah, neat.
And some of the hotels are just, for example, the Hilton chain. Even though haunted stuff has gone on for years, documented, ESPN even wrote an article about one of the places. And the Hilton official line is, none of our hotels are haunted.
Right.
Well, the one here in Chicago most certainly is, from what I've heard from people.
So when's that book coming out, Joe?
The publisher is looking at it, and we've got the stories done. I'm in the process of writing letters to all the hotels asking for permission to publish it, to put their address in there. And once we get all that stuff done, it'll probably be out in time for Halloween.
Oh, cool. Good. I'll look forward to reading that. That'll be great. So that means that I'll be seeing you at more conferences.
I'm afraid so. Yeah.
Well, I was telling Rick before the show, everything you're doing in the next couple of months, I'm doing too. So
I'll be seeing you.
Yeah. So now, you know, you of course know that I have my own opinion of you know, places in the Pacific Northwest that I think are the most haunted. I'd like to hear from your experience where you think are the most haunted.
Well, certainly the Palace Hotel up in Port Townsend. It's an old rickety hotel, and it's done in turn-of-the-century styles. It used to be a bordello, and all of the rooms are named for the working girls that used to be there. One of the gals walked in.
Wow, Karen, you weren't lying. Sorry.
Every place in the I contend that every place in the Pacific Northwest used to be a whorehouse.
That's right, and I think it's interesting when you're doing research. They say, "Oh yeah, this place was a bordello." That's like when you're talking to people about past lives, and they say, "Well, in a former life, I was dot dot dot," and they were always a king or a pharaoh. And I'm looking for the person that was. Yeah, I was on an Egyptian pleasure barge, and I'm still sore. We don't find too many people that say, "Yeah, I carried the garbage out for the pharaoh. That was my previous life."
Mm-hmm.
So all of the hotels are usually, you know, they come with something. And if they've been around for a while, they will. As a matter of fact, up at the Palace Hotel in Port Townsend, a lady was traveling through weather like this we're having in Seattle. Huge storm. She wanted a place to stay. She walked in, and she was the only one in the hotel. And so she signed in. She got the key. She went upstairs. And then she came down to the desk clerk and said, "You know, this is a wonderful hotel. It's all done in Victorian. And I want to tell you that the woman that's walking around dressed up in a Victorian style, that's really neat." And the gal behind the desk said, "What are you talking about? I'm the only one there. I'm the only one working tonight." And she says, "No, there was a gal upstairs, and she was on the second floor." She said, "Oh, Rosie, yes, of course. That's our resident ghost."
Now, Joe,
ghost hunter, and she immediately checked out and got back on the road and took off.
Oh, my.
No, Joe, she said that the ghost's name is Rosie. I mean, is that her actual name, or is that just a name that was given to her?
That's actually a name that, because I couldn't remember the actual name. I took it out of context. But it is in the book, and I've got the names, and they have gone back and checked it out and researched, and they do have the names of the ghosts. They know who they are. So for people who are like EVP, that's a perfect place to go.
Okay. Well, I think I see a trip coming up in my future. Very soon. No.
You need to go there.
Yeah, I do. Very clearly, I do. The last haunted hotel I stayed in, I think, was down in Tokeland. So, which is another, you know, good one. Although what's funny about Tokelin is that it's haunted, but not with the legend that they claim it's haunted with. So it's one of those. And there are a lot of those around here, I think. So have you been to the Klondike, Joe?
Yes, I have. I have been in the Klondike, chatted with them, and there's a lot of good stuff going on there. Back up in Port Townsend, or close to Port Townsend, is Port Hadlock. And Port Hadlock is a fancy hotel which used to be the Klassen Industrial Company. And they had huge vats there that made vinegar and acid and things like that. And back around 1917, 1920, a guy named Oscar fell through and into one of the vats. And it was basically an acid bath. So he was kicking and screaming. They pulled him out, and they needed to get him to the closest hospital, which is about 20 miles away, through the snow, through the rain, through the woods, to Port Townsend. And he didn't make it. But as he was being carried through the woods, his flesh was dripping off his bones like mozzarella cheese. I mean, it's a horrible time. And that's all documented. Well, he worked at the plant, and the plant has been closed down, and they turned it into a hotel now. And
yeah, so now, I stayed there.
If you go to the hotel, some of the rooms are circular. And when you're lying in bed looking up at the mirrored ceiling, you can see the circle. And that's where that was one of the vats that Oscar fell into. So you can actually sleep in the vat that he fell into. And
that sounds like where I would want to sleep.
Wear your galoshes, and he's always making an appearance, and he will throw things around. He'll harass the wait staff, and one of the wait when she still works there, I talked to her. And she was out there. Things were going bad, and she finally said, "Look, Oscar, you need to stop it. I'm trying to get some work done." And she thought for a minute, and she just got a feeling, and she said, "Do you want to dance?" And so she danced for about 5 minutes, kind of like a waltz or a minuet. She didn't see anything, but all the activity ceased.
If you go there in the
restaurant, they have a wine, which is called Oscar's Wine. So they've actually bottled something, and they're carrying on his tradition there.
Oh, very cool. So do you know about the – I don't think it's in your book. How about the winery down in Dundee in Oregon, the Argyle Winery? Is that in your book?
No, that is not in my book. It's on my list of places to check out.
Yeah, I've been there. It's pretty cool. So – and they have a wine that's what made me think of it, is they have a wine named after, they call it the Spirit House Wine because of the ghost there, so.
That's good, that's good.
Yeah, it's a pretty tasty Pinot Noir, too, so yay.
I'm not much of a drinker. Joe, I wanted to switch gears a little bit, and I wanted to go back to your first book, Ghostology 101. I'm very big on theory, and anything that would be called Ghostology 101 obviously would be big on theory, correct?
Yes. Specifically scientific theory.
Okay. So to you, what do you think a ghost is? I mean, do you cover that in the book?
We cover theories on it because naturally nobody really knows what a ghost is.
Correct.
A lot of times we'll be, in fact, we investigated a poltergeist over in Bainbridge Island, and things were flying off, and I asked the people, "Well, how bad is it?" And they said, "Well, we're sleeping in the garage. We can't go in the house." Mm-hmm. And we walked in there, and we started doing the stuff, and it's, "Well, tell me about the family." And they had two daughters who were teenage daughters, 12, 13, 14, right okay. In that area where we get a lot of poltergeist activity. And so the question is this really a ghost, or is this some type of a mental energy being projected by the women or the young ladies there? And after a while, when the young ladies were not there, there was no activity. And so that's one of the theories that we have about poltergeists, is that it's not really ghosts, it's a mental projection of people in the room that are actually doing things. And so that's one of the theories that we have to talk about. And as we discover more about ghosts, we find out that some of these are human beings, some of them are animals, some of them are prehistoric type things. So there's something out there. I like to start with Einstein's concept that energy cannot be created or destroyed. And having said that, the mitochondria that we're all using right now, our listeners have got it coursing through their system. It's creating the energy that allows them to live. And so this is an ongoing thing. Well, if we've got that energy, then what happens when the life support system shuts down? And where does that energy go? If we cannot create it or destroy it, it simply goes on as a different format. And that's the theory that I generally prescribe to. And sometimes we hear ghosts where it's the same thing going on over and over, Civil War soldiers walking through an area, just repeating the stuff as if it's a tape that's on repeat over and over and over.
Right.
And they may not be conscious ghosts, and that energy may just be stuck in the walls of Gettysburg, and it comes out. And when someone else comes up who's able to see that, that's when you have a ghost.
Sure.
Right.
What are your thoughts and ideas on working with clairvoyance, mediums, anything of that nature? Do you cover that in Ghostology?
We do. As a matter of fact, the Ghostology 101 book was actually written as on a joint venture between Ross Allison and myself.
Okay.
And our goal was to come up with a book or a handout. It started off as a pamphlet, which we could give members of a ghost and say, "Look, if you want to join us," it was the only group that had open enrollment. And so if you were interested, you could join us, you could go on an investigation, you could go on an expedition. And we found out that we needed to train these people. And we had, several hundred people in the organization. Some new, some very experienced, and some just didn't know anything. And so we came up with a book at the beginning of it to describe, these are the theories that we're looking for. These are the things that happen when ghosts are around. Things move, temperature variations, the hair on your back or your neck stands up, that type of stuff. And when you see that, we might be able to catch it on film. And it might be a digital camera, it might be a chemical film camera, it might be an infrared camera, but these are all the tools. And we laid all that stuff down to them. And then we also gave them forms, and the forms are in the book. So, look, when you see that, you can do that. And so one of the things that we did is we addressed the concept of developing a team. And so you've got an observer that goes along with you. You need to have a technical person that goes along with you. And then we always like to have a psychic that goes along with us. And working with the psychics in a team like that, rather than the psychic say, well, I'm feeling something, I've got the presence of someone, something's going on here. If that's going on, you've got one ray of intelligence coming in, and then the observer says, you know, I'm getting some EMF spikes here, too. Now you're getting something specific as opposed to just a feeling. And sometimes the psychics are just absolutely just wrong.
Yes.
You know, for example, any old hotel, I'm getting the picture of a woman who's abused. I think she was a prostitute. Not everyone in that hotel that died was a prostitute. But if they're mind is preconditioned to that, they'll see that. On the other hand, I've found that the psychics are uncannily accurate when you walk in cold. And a lot of times we'd walk into an investigation and we would not give any information to the psychic. So the psychic does their thing, writes it down on the form, independent of the other team, and then after, the next day, we'd sit down and we'd go over the photos and the tapes and all the evidence that we've acquired, and we'd find out that we're getting some pretty good stuff. The psychic would say, yeah, the ghost name is Sarah, and one of the EVP says Sarah.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, I always think it's interesting to ask, you know, people such as yourself who are, you know, were interested in this before 2003 or 2004. It seems like people have been interested in this for many years before then, actually, are a little bit more open to the idea of working with people who are, you know, psychically gifted. Do you find that that's true for yourself?
That people are more willing to work with psychics?
Yeah, people who are actually are interested, became interested in this field long before all the television shows came out. They seem to be a lot more interested in, or rather open to working with psychic mediums.
Yes, I think that's the case. And part of that is just the cultural shift. We've come a long way culturally in the last 20 years. Women can vote now, so we're heading in the right direction. And it's interesting when all these cultures come in from Indonesia, Thailand, the Pacific, the southwest part of the United States, and we're all sharing this stuff. And we're saying, well, just because the guy's not a Catholic doesn't mean that he and I can't communicate and we can't share some ideas and some research. As a matter of fact, I was working with some of the guys. I was teaching a class for some of the Navajo Indians, Navajo Nation. And the word got out, and this was not a ghost class. This was a mechanical class. And the guy said, hey, we Googled your name, and you're a ghost hunter. And I said, well, yeah, but I don't like to talk about that when I'm doing this other stuff. And they said, well, we'd like to talk to you. And one of the guys had a photograph, and it was a deer stand that he had set up, and the deer were coming over there, and he put a little hunter's camera there, and you could see the deer, and the deer was looking off in the distance, and when you looked off in the distance, you could see a little girl, just a little ghostly image of a little girl. And behind her, a little more vague, were two, looked like adult forms. And he said, what do you think of that? And I thought, this is really good. And I asked him if I could use it, and he said, sure, you know, we can use it. So we've got that image. And then I told him, I said, well, it's probably a ghost. And he said, well, yeah. I said, does anyone else here, and they were all Navajo Nation people, and I said, does anyone here have a ghost story to share? And nobody said a word. And finally one of the guys looked at me and says, Joe, we're Navajo. We talk to the dead all the time. And I talked to my mother last night. And the guy next to him, and his mother died like 5 years ago. And she still gives him a rash of... So it was kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, my grandmother, who was Cherokee, when I became interested in this field, you know, she was really actually supportive about it, even though I was like 8 or 9 years old. And she's like, I talk to spirits all the time. Your grandparents talk to spirits all the time. Their parents talk to spirits all the time. So when you're dealing with, I find that when you're dealing with Native Americans, that it's like, this is nothing new to them. they are so close to the spirit world, far, far closer than, you know, the rest of us are.
Absolutely. And even in the Judeo-Christian religions that came up, like I was born and raised a Roman Catholic. Mm-hmm. And when you read the Catholic Creed, it specifically says we believe in the saints and the intercession of the saints to help us. And the Catholic Church prays to saints. And so that's a, so if you're doing that, it's like, you know, there's something going on there. And it was recognized by the earliest part of the church and still recognized by the Vatican.
Yeah, that's I was brought up Catholic too, and my family is still really heavily Catholic, and they know my interests. They know that I like hanging out with people with the same kind of interests, but to them, it's kind of like, you know, they kind of like see this as being like something of the devil, as my mom likes to say.
You
are a Satan spawn.
Yeah.
And then when you talk to the people, and I've spent a long time talking to them, I said, "Well, do you believe in angels? Well, of course." Mm-hmm. Do you believe in the devil? Well, of course. Do you believe in demons? Of course. I said, well, but how can you not believe in ghosts? It's in the Bible. It's in the creed. It's all over the place. So we're starting to see those walls start to crumble down. Not everywhere. I mean, don't go in, you know, Sunday and start talking to your priest. And hey, Joe Teeple says you've got a special book on here, because he'll hit you with the book of excommunication real quick.
So, Joe, when I last saw you, you talked about something that I just found absolutely fascinating, and I wanted to talk about it again so that our listeners can hear. And that's the what was the name of this cemetery? There's a cemetery in Seattle.
It's the Comet Lodge Cemetery, and it's just above Georgetown. There's a lot of activity there. It's Georgetown is actually the first part of Seattle that was settled. It wasn't settled by the people who went on to found Seattle, the city of Seattle. But there were already people there. And of course, the Duwamish Indians were there before the white people came there. But when the Denny Party showed up, there were already people up in Georgetown, you know, making cabins and making a living up there. So up on top of the hill, somewhere between Georgetown, as you're heading up towards the VA hospital up on that road there, on Albro Place, if you go to the right, the road continues on up to the right, and there's a very, very small cemetery that's called the Comet Lodge Cemetery. Mm-hmm. And if you go there and you stand there, if you look through the trees and realize that the trees would not have been there 100 years ago, you have a spectacular view of the Duwamish Valley. And you could see why people would bury their people there, because it's a very, very nice place. Well, they were there. The farmers came in. They added the white bodies there. And everything was getting along great. The Native Americans and the new pioneers were you know, mixing bodies and stuff. And everything was going along great. And then the place became, I think it was the Oddfellows that actually took over the place. And that's the Comet Lodge, the Oddfellow Comet Lodge. Is the group that took that over to maintain this thing. And at that time, the Oddfellows were very powerful. A lot of people belonged to the Oddfellows. Big brewery thing, Rainier Brewery was going on there. They were making a lot of beer. A lot of good people up there. As a matter of fact, one of the photos that we have of this thing is a cemetery. And I think there's like 50 people. It was one of like the brewmasters who died. And everyone had bowler hats on, and they buried him up there. And so this thing went on for a very long, you know, it's a large cemetery. And they put the people in there. Well, eventually, as the new cemeteries came along, they stopped using the Comet Lodge Cemetery. And as people went along and they started to die, the caretakers started to die. They were buried in other places, and the place grew into disuse. And then somebody decided that it's not a cemetery, and so it's okay to build houses on it. And so I would say about two-thirds of the cemetery is now under a subdivision.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm sorry, you still there, Joe? Did we lose you?
I'm still there.
Okay. So, yeah, it is. It's under a subdivision, and so... Now, was that the cemetery that you talked about that they actually tried to move the bodies from to? No, that was the one for the Denny regrade, wasn't it?
The Denny Park was where they did move the bodies. And if you go down to Denny Park and look at that area there, originally the cemetery was about 60 feet higher, and when they did the regrade, they had to even all that stuff out. So in the process of doing that, they had to move the bodies from there, from one place to the new cemetery, and they started dragging them out during the day. So these carts and wagons would be going over, and of course someone's hand would, you know, an arm would fall out, and it was just gross. And so the townspeople said, you know, you can't do this anymore. You have to move them at night. And so they said, okay, we'll start doing it at night. And so they moved the bodies at midnight, and that's where the expression the graveyard shift came from.
Oh, right.
Boom, there you go. It started here in Seattle. That's right.
Yeah, I work the graveyard shift, so I'm definitely going to share that with my partner on the overnight.
But back to the Comet Lodge Cemetery now. You were talking about that there are houses that are built where these people's graves were and are, and that there's some activity associated with it that now probably because, you know, they aren't remembered any other way.
That's right. As you stand in the cemetery now, the city has made it into a park. And so they moved all the headstones, and in the process of building the houses, they bulldozed a lot of the headstones together in one area, and the maps that we have of the places don't really reflect where the actual bodies are or were. So we're not sure that all the bodies were left. The closest houses to that area was where the Kiddyland was, the children's cemetery. Okay. And in those houses that are there now, the children report seeing things, little girls, little boys. As a matter of fact, one of the women talked about this stuff, and she said that they've got, she would go to bed, and she'd put her children to bed, and when they would wake up in the morning, there would be toys scattered all over the house. And so she would yell at her son and say, "You can't be leaving your toys out. You need to pick them up." So they'd pick all the toys up, and the next night they'd repeat it, and the next morning the toys were scattered all over the house. And this would go on for months. And finally, she asked him, and says, "You can't do that." And the kid said, "It's not me, it's him." And he pointed at the foot of his bed. Of course, the adult couldn't see anything. But he said, "He's standing right there. He's the one that takes my toys up and doesn't put them away." And so that's been going on for a long time over there.
Yeah. It's the story to me. The reason that it's so compelling is just the utter disrespect for where people were buried and for cemeteries that, you know, because somebody wanted to build a subdivision there.
And they paved roads over it. So the cemetery used to go out halfway across the road. They actually dug a sewer line through the middle of it and put in a sewer line when they were putting in a sewer line up there. So the Comet Lodge Cemetery is definitely a good place to check out. A lot of EVP goes on there. People have reported seeing little children in the mist in the early morning and the late evenings, running from trees to trees, as normal children would do, just running back and forth. And people have reported seeing that type of stuff.
So that's up off of Alboro in Seattle. Is that what you said?
That's right. If you're going down I-5, into Seattle from Federal Way, there's an exit called Alboro. You turn on that exit, and then instead of going left, which would take you up to the schools and stuff, you turn right and it kind of snakes around. At that point, you're within half a mile of the Comet Lodge Cemetery.
Okay, very good. Good to know.
You know, usually with cemeteries, though, and there always seems to be dispute on this, some controversy, that cemeteries in and of themselves are not haunted, because why would a spirit want to stay where their bodies are interred? But, you know, with the Comet Lodge, it just seems like there was so much disturbance that's what, you know, woke these spirits up.
And if you think about that, I mean, going back historically, the Comet Lodge Cemetery was a very serene place. It was a place, and historically, that's where people would go to have picnics. They'd go up there, and they'd say hi to, you know, great-grandfather, and they'd have a picnic, and so that might be why some spirits hang out in cemeteries. And it might be using this analogy of energy, it could be that they were always there, but they needed a little bit more energy to manifest themselves. And so when we dug the sewer line through there, we built a house on there, there's a lot of energy being transferred there. And maybe they were able to recharge. Maybe this is why we see a lot of activity when there's construction. Someone remodels a house and all of a sudden something starts happening. That might explain some of that. why, you know, I have no intention of hanging around in a cemetery after I've gone. I just don't see the point in that thing. But back right. in the 1900s, that was a park because we didn't have a lot of parks, and that may have been the place that the kids remember and say, yeah, let's go up there playing. And if one or two of them are there and now their friends are there, yeah, this is pretty good. I mean, where else are you going to go? Going to that light? I don't know what that light is. I'm going to stay over here, but...
Yeah, interesting. Well, it's a place that I've never checked out. And I've never been really one to do a lot of I've never investigated a cemetery. I've walked around them because I love cemeteries. I'm just morbid that way. I think headstones are such a unique look into the history of a place and of people that they fascinate me. But I've never really investigated a cemetery before. To me, it feels like it would be disrespectful to do so, but. So I wanted to ask you, Joe, because it seems to me that when you talk to people about haunted places, a lot of times when you say, well, why do you think this place is haunted? And I've said this as well. The people ascribe kind of the motive for the ghost that, well, they want to be remembered. Do you think that that's really what it is, that they're reaching out to us because they want to be remembered, or are they just bored and they're looking to goof around with someone?
I think that there's a wide variety of reasons for a haunting, and we have to realize that each individual ghost is going to be an individual. And so the reason for hanging around could be anything. I mean, why did the people come from San Francisco and come up here and live in Seattle? And why would anyone want to stay here looking out the window today? Why did the Vikings come across here and settle in Minnesota where it's cold because it's like home, so they like that. So when you look at that, sometimes ghosts have a message to tell. There's some unfinished business. That's a common theme that we see. A lot of times I seem to stumble, and I have a theory that some of them are just confused and they're afraid. I don't really want to go into that light. I know that there's a normal progression. I know I'm supposed to go on. But what if I'm going to be judged and they were raised under this hell and brimfire type thing?
Sure.
And, you know, I can see right here, I feel pretty comfortable with this.
Right.
There's a very good book. It's called The Airman Who Would Not Die.
I've read that,
Yeah, it's a great book. And the interesting thing is a lot of the information in there is documented that after the person died, he came back because he had a message that he needed to get to someone. In this case, it was the British War Department. That one of the Zeppelins that they were building had a fatal flaw in it. And so he communicated with them because they were resisting his attempts or whatever reason, but he could communicate to his wife. And so when he presented it to the British War Ministry, she came in and said, you know, I'm getting this message and she started explaining it. The guy closed the door and he said, that information is classified top secret. Your husband should never have told you about that. Well, he didn't tell me when he was alive, but now this is coming through, and they looked at it, and it was a fatal error that the airship would have broken in half.
Wow! And what are they going to do to her? You know, what are they going to do to him once he's dead for sharing state secrets? Right.
Right. Well, as a matter of fact, at one of the lectures we were at, we had a lawyer there, and one of the things she mentioned was when you're doing EVP, you have to watch over the Privacy Act. You cannot record other people's conversations. And my question is, you know, how do I get approval from a ghost to record their conversations?
Yeah, right.
Especially with the, it's so spontaneous. That's why I personally don't believe that you can really use the scientific method in investigating ghosts, because it's so spontaneous and you can't just say, all right, do this now, you know, take it into a lab and all that.
Yeah, there are a few controls.
I think that we need to modify the scientific method. And the scientific method, we need to understand that you start off with an observation. You see something, and then you come up with, you develop a theory to prove that observation, you set up a set of experiments to prove the theory that you're developing. And I think that's the step that we're at. But too often, we find people running around and they're getting an occasional EVP and an occasional orb or an occasional photograph, and they're not documenting. But you have to realize we're not there all the time. I mean, if Edison, when he was testing his light bulbs, you know, if he just did it the same way ghost hunters did this, he probably would have been out of the room when he had that one light bulb that burned for 13 hours.
Right.
You know, yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know what we're doing here. Let's try bamboo again.
Well, so this is what we're going to do, Joe. We need to take a break, and then you can stick around for the next segment, right?
Sure. I'm here for you.
Yeah, you got lots of stuff coming up, so I want to talk about some of that. And you're such a great storyteller. I hope you have more stories to tell us. So when we come back, we'll still be talking with Joe Teeples, author of Pacific Northwest Haunts, which you can find on Amazon.com. And so we'll be right back. Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio.
8. I deliver your Sunday paper every week.
7. I'm the intern. We work on the same floor.
1 in 8 Americans is struggling with hunger.
6. Our kids walk to school together every day.
Including millions of children and seniors.
5. We chat in the elevator at work sometimes.
We all know people who aren't sure where their next meal is coming from.
4. I'm your cashier at the grocery store.
3. I work at the coffee shop around the corner.
2. I'm your babysitter. I care for your children.
1. I'm your grandmother's friend. We play bingo together.
Who's the 1 in 8 in your life that needs help? You can make a difference through Feeding America and its nationwide network of more than 200 food banks. Take action at feedingamerica.org/1in8. A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
And Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking. So keep it real, keep it real. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
The competition has taken notice.
Oh my God.
Good luck keeping up with us.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
About chemicals in the sky. Well, I decide
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Hey, welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Thanks for coming back. And for the last 45 minutes, we've been talking to Joe Teeples. He is the author of Ghostology 101, as well as Pacific Northwest Haunts. And it's been a really interesting conversation. Thanks for sticking around for another segment, Joe.
I'm glad to be here.
Excellent.
So we were talking off the air about some of the things that you have coming up, and I'm going to let you mention what and when they are, because it'll be promoting me too, because I'll be there as well.
Shameless self-promotion, Karen.
That's right. I'm letting Joe promote me tonight. Go!
Well, for people that want to get into this stuff and just want to learn more, that's one of the ways that I found out back in 1971. The UFO thing was big, and so I went to some of these lectures on UFOs, and as people tried to explain it, is it swamp gas, is it this kind of stuff, and I thought there'd be 20 people. I walked in the hall, there were 200 people there, and they were all like-minded, whereas where I was, I said, yeah, we're talking about UFOs, and the guys just said, you're a little bit crazy, buddy, and now here's a whole bunch of like-minded people who are talking about this and in a scientific manner. And so that's what ghost hunting has come about. And a good way to do this stuff is to go to some of the conferences that are out there. For example, the Oregon Ghost Conference is coming up, and I think it's in March 9th. So if you're listening, you may jot down some of these notes, and you can go to the website, just type in Oregon Ghost Conference. It's going to be in Oregon City on March 9th, 10th, and 11th. So it's 3 days. And I think they're using the Best Western Hotel, and I think they've got a special rate. But you can really immerse yourself in this stuff and talk to some guys. The people will be displaying evidence. They'll be talking about what's going on down in the Oregon area, Washington area. It's a good group of people, and it's a fun thing to do.
And Oregon City is crazy haunted, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a nice old city. You've got a lot of wind. There's water there. So there's always a renewal of energy if you were following our previous conversation. And that's what makes it exciting is things are happening. And I also think that sometimes when you get this many people together, the ghosts leech off of the ghost hunters themselves and take some of the stuff. That might account for some of the drained batteries and equipment malfunction. And stuff, but I think they take some of the energy from some of our people. I've seen psychics walk into a place and they're totally drained after 30 minutes. And I need to get out of here. And there's all kinds of activity that we're picking up on the tape recorders, on the cameras, that type of stuff. But the psychic's out; she's drained, and so she's heading out. Now, closer to home in Silverdale, Washington, in April, there's going to be a nonprofit event. And I'll be speaking there, and this is the second time I've spoken for Black Wolf Paranormal Group over there. Haunting for Hope is going to be in Silverdale. Again, go to the website, check it out, Haunting for Hope. It'll pop up, and that's a one-day event, so you don't have to do an overnight. You just need to drive over to Silverdale, and that's April 14th. And then the last one that I've got on my calendar so far this year is in May, and it's going to be at the SeaTac Hilton right across from the airport in Seattle. And the event is called Crypticon, CryptiCon.
Now, you know, if I could just interrupt for a second, I was just at the website, and this looks like quite possibly one of the most funnest of all the conferences.
It's going to be awesome.
It just looks great. You know, before you talk a little bit more about, you know, could you go into greater detail? Like, I love the film festival. Awesome.
Oh, the Crypticon?
Yeah.
That website, that is a hoot, and it's a lot of. It started off as a horror movie convention, and it is. They've been doing this thing for years here, and they take over the Hilton. They always have discount rooms, so people fly in from different areas, stay there at the Hilton. As a matter of fact, last year the Seattle Zombies did a light rail trip, and they came up there, and they were showing a movie there on zombies. And 5 minutes into the movie, about 200 zombies walked in the back and just kind of did a loop and walked out and took them the light rail and went back. So that was pretty neat.
That would be Cheryl Knight's worst nightmare, wouldn't it, Cheryl?
It would be.
That would freak her out. Her biggest fear is zombies, Joe.
Well, you have to realize when a zombie's after you, you know, they do want you for your brain.
At least
okay, that
body,
doesn't yeah. make me feel any better.
Another pretty face. So Crypticon.
So, yeah, go ahead. No, I was just going to say, so you're going to be speaking at a panel. I know you're going to be doing the Paranormal Authors panel, right?
Right. There are about five different panels that are set up that are ghost-related. And this is the first time they've done this, because usually they talk about movies. They've got Bruce Campbell comes up, signs autographs, and so how to apply horror makeup and this type of thing. This is the first year that they've decided, you know, let's bring in some paranormal groups. And I think there's like four or five paranormal groups that have volunteered to come in there, and they're gonna give them some tables. They can set up some stuff out in the area so people can come and talk to them, see what they're doing, play with some of the equipment, talk to the people, the technical people that use the EMF directors. I know that I'm gonna be on at least one panel, possibly two or three other panels. We're gonna have authors. I'm gonna be there talking about my books, of course. Mercedes from Market Tours is going to be there talking about the Pike Market, ghosts that she's encountered, and we've got some other people that are coming up there. So it's really going to be good. And there's also a vampire slant. I've recently written a book entitled Vampires, and when I was doing the research, it's a fiction book, but when I was doing research on it, I was stunned to find out that there's an underground movement of vampires, and these are real, drinking blood type vampires. There are seven clubs, dance clubs in Seattle that list themselves as being, quote, vampire friendly. So that's one of the things we can talk about. So we've gone from the movie of Twilight where they sparkle in the dark or in the sunlight to the dance club where, you know, hey, we want to step back here and let me suck on your neck for a while. So maybe Cheryl would like to go along to that one.
When you were telling me that, I was absolutely shocked. Now, say the name of your vampire book, because I think that a lot of people would be interested in reading the vampire novel, too.
You go to Amazon.com and just look up my name, Joe Teeples, it'll pop up. The book is entitled Vampires, A Maxwell Jackson Adventure. And there's actually a glossary in it where it explains some of the, because we talk about ghosts in there too. So it talks a little bit about the ghosts. It talks a little bit about the vampires. And I put down the addresses for the clubs if anyone wants to check that stuff out. A few fiction books I've ever written that I actually felt I really should put a glossary in here so people could find these things.
I was actually surprised. I mean, I knew that there were people who played at being vampires. But when you were telling me about the blood drinking, yeah, that's a little creepy.
There's been people that
do flip over a playing card and do a little role playing games. But in these things, it's like, do you mind if I make a small incision and take just a small amount of your blood? It's a challenge.
I think that's been going
with the dead.
Yeah.
I think that's been going on for a long time, though. Here in Chicago, there's a club that I used to go to. I used to be really into the goth scene. And The Exit. I actually remember being in there with a buddy of mine and watching a guy. The blood was coming out of his mouth while he was on his girlfriend's neck. Yeah. And this was like 15 years ago. It was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen.
Exits have back rooms where you can go there, and if you're in with a group, you can go in there and you get in some other activities there. So, yeah. And here's the challenge. And as I was doing the research for my book, I could find a lot of stuff about vampires. As a matter of fact, I found that in Washington State there is a vampire temple, and it's not the Twilight one over in Forks. So there's actually a vampire temple that's out there. So I did a lot of research on that and discovered a lot of stuff that was kind of scary.
So is it like a religion?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's kind of a religion, and but it's not a satanic religion. It's different.
That just really freaks me out. Yeah. So did you go to some of these places then, Joe, or did you just do the research from afar?
I believe that if you're going to do anything, just like ghost hunting, you have to go there.
Yeah.
The problem is just listening to a radio show, watching it on TV, reading in the press, is that you're only learning what someone else decided to show you. For example, when the Occupy movement started in Seattle, there was a lot of stuff in the news, and no one really knew what they were doing. So I just got on the light rail and went down there and talked to the people. And that's what a researcher has to do, go in there. So when you're talking about vampires, go in there and talk to the people that are doing this type of stuff and say, look, I'm curious about what you're doing. And I was surprised to find a lot of, oh, here, let me explain it to you.
Wow. So, but does that mean that there are more vampire novels coming?
Not for me. No, just this one. Maxwell Jackson is the key. It's a series of 10 books, and Maxwell Jackson is a ghost hunter who is hired by the City of Seattle Police Department to solve murders. And so I'm halfway through the next one, which is on werewolves. And the third one, Cheryl will love this, is on zombies.
Zombies!
Zombies, no! Yes.
You'll be rushing out to buy Joe. You know what, Joe? When you do the research on the zombie stuff, would you take Cheryl with you?
Ooh, that's good. That's
good.
Wait a minute.
Cheryl should show up at the Red, White, and Dead event, which I think is July 6th. And if just, again, do an internet search, look up Seattle Zombies. There's a website. Last year, we had over 4,000 people dressed up as zombies, and they all walked around the city of Fremont.
Oh, my God.
See, now, I would find it hard not to do the Thriller dance if I was dressed up as a monster. That's just me.
They do the Thriller dance. As a matter of fact, they do.
Of course.
I posted on my Facebook page today, one of the things that I want to see a group of zombies do river dance.
little zombie clogging.
I think that would be great.
That would be pretty awesome. Okay, so that's cool. So you're working on the second book now, and it's going to be a series of 10, and you sound like you already sort of have a little bit of a story arc going.
That's right. And for my granddaughter, because I am a grandfather, I wrote a book which will probably be published by Schiffer. It's a children's book, and it's a fairy adventure. So I've got fairies in there, which brings up the next one. I think there's a Fairy Con West coming to Seattle, I think in February.
You know all the awesome places to hang out, Joe. I should hang out with you more often. I should step outside of those. Do you take your wife to all these places?
I drag her to some of these places. We walked into the steampunk convention last year, and she looked at me and she said, I'm leaving. You know?
Now, those are the real nerds right there, but, man, they have a great fashion sense.
Well, they do, and it's a lot of fun when you do that. As a matter of fact, this last year we went down to Sacramento or San Francisco for the Charles Dickens Victorian Fair, and mm-hmm. we walked in this place, and I had my little camera, and I'm wearing street clothes. And I walked in, and all these people are wearing Victorian clothes, and they were all in character. And I said, mm-hmm. "Are you guys all hired by the group?" And they said, "No, we just came along."
Yeah, it's like going to San Diego Comic Con. You know, you go dressed up as your favorite comic book character.
So I have to ask, what steampunk is?
The concept is the Victorian age is still alive, so you wear bowlers, caps, that type of stuff. The queen is still on the throne, but we're scientifics, so you could have an iPhone, but it had to be steam-powered.
Right. Or there's space flight, you know, people already on the moon, and it's all steam-powered. And
how have I never heard of this? I'm a total geek, so how I've never heard of this is beyond me.
We have to take you to some dangerous places.
So Crypticon is, I actually just looked it up. I believe it's Seattle Crypticon, but then I got off of it because I was looking. Yeah, it's CrypticonSeattle.com.
Yes. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And as I said, this is the first year that they've really asked the ghost hunters, the actual paranormal investigators, to show up and talk about it, have some panels. And they're going to have some very interesting panels. They're talking about the author stuff, what it takes to be a ghost hunter, some of the theories of ghost hunters, what's your scariest story, that type of stuff. All from people that have been doing this stuff.
Well, that's right. I need to. Thank you for reminding me. I know Colette just sent me an email, and I've got to get back to her and tell her what panel I want to be on or what panel. So I suppose I better do that, huh?
Yeah, because if not, you'll be on a panel with me, and that'll be incredibly tough, you know?
I'm used to hanging out with you at these kinds of things, so got to meet some other people.
and for those that are listening and talking and saying, God, this Joe Teeples guy must be the biggest geek that I've ever run into.
There's nothing wrong with that.
He totally is. It's great.
I'm really not.
No, in your real life, you have written some books about, like, OSHA safety or office safety or something, haven't you? Industrial safety, that type of thing?
Yes, it is. In real life, I spend my life telling people not to put their fingers in fan blades. And afterwards, I said, can I get a picture of that so I can warn the next person not to put his finger in a fan blade?
Hey, it's a living. So I know somebody was saying that she was really excited. Actually, it's one of our listeners, Elaine from Whoopi down in Oregon, was saying that somebody told her at work that they'd left a Joe Teeples book for her, and she was all excited, and she ran, and it was one of your occupational safety books. So
it's amazing. The safety people are like, you're a go setter? I said, yes, I am. And he said, well, what does that mean? I said, that means you need to listen to me now, or I'll get my EVP equipment, and you can listen to me later. Take your pick.
See, it's, you know, I never really
works
thought about that, but there is a dovetailing between your day job and your night job, huh?
Absolutely. And my wife, who is very understanding, is a registered nurse, and so when people come into the emergency room and they say, yeah, I cut my finger off on the saw blade, and the first thing she said, was there a guard on it? I said, well, no. She said, you need to talk to my husband.
Because he can tell you either way. So that's does right. Does your wife buy into the ghost stuff then?
She knows, she realizes that there's something out there, but she's not too concerned about it. She kind of puts up with me, and I think she's a closet believer.
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah. I understand.
Yeah, that's same the same
way.
Wife.
Yeah, same way my husband is that the reason that he goes is because I ask him and he follows me, but he wouldn't go on his own. And, you know.
Well, we had a psychic development class, and I offered to host it at my house. And she was at work, and she really didn't know about it. I thought they'd all be gone. So she was coming home, and I said, yeah, I've got about 13 psychics down in the basement. And she said, get them out of my house before I get home.
You know what? That's funny. I recently hosted a psychic development class at my house. And we have a little bit of activity that goes on here and there. Maybe you can put my house in your next book. No, I'm kidding. And but since we've had that class, the activity has picked up like crazy. Just because, that energy.
They're feeding on it. And when we had the stuff here, it was down in the basement. And we actually had one psychic from south of Olympia. And she said, I can't stay here. She said, do you know you have violent spirits down there? And I said, well, apparently not. But thanks for telling me. She said, they don't like you. There's two of them who really don't like you. I said, what do they want to do? They don't want you here. I said, well, they had their chance. And I'm here now. So
too bad,
that was
right?
Before American Gothic Horror Story came out on AMC.
Oh, the American Horror Story. Oh, my goodness. I was just telling Rick, Cheryl and I were talking about that on the show like every week because we were watching it. And every week I kept thinking, no, I can't watch this another week. I've had enough. And yet every week I would watch it anyway. And I noticed that they were just nominated for a couple of Golden Globes. So
that was pretty good.
Never seen it.
It was very good.
Yeah,
now, there is a location in Georgetown, which is the Orient Express Restaurant and Lounge on 4th Avenue.
Uh-huh.
And it's a neat one to go into because it used to be Andy's Diner, and it's actually their railroad cars. The guy that put it together put a bunch of 1940s railroad cars and put them all together, and there's a bar in the middle, and you can go in there and eat. And one of the cars used to be FDR's car, President Roosevelt's car, that he toured the nation with. So it's kind of neat to go there and see that historically. And if you go there, be sure to talk to the bartender. There's a male bartender who has been there for years, and he is ghost hunter friendly. He will talk to you about the stuff that's going in there, like the full-bodied apparition of a black man that limps down the areas, and people go and chase him, and then he vanishes. Or the woman who's dressed in a 1940s outfit, very nice outfit, and when she walks into the bar, people turn their heads and look at her because she really is attractive. Mm-hmm. And then when they follow her to the back where there is no exit, they go in the back where they keep the potatoes and the cans and things like that, and there's no one there.
Love that.
Yeah. But no, what are people thinking when they see somebody like that, somebody dressed in the 40s? Or, you know, they make it a movie, television show?
We're in Seattle. That's normal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Seattle's a pretty interesting city.
Walking the streets here, and we have Gothic people. So to have someone dressed up retro, yeah, people just thought, well, she's just one of the normal people that's going through here, and she's been dead for years.
Yeah. So it's not somebody who likes vintage, it's somebody who is vintage.
Vintage.
So, paranormal bucket list, Joe, do you have one?
Not really. I keep running into places. And then when I get there, I line them out. I'm fortunate that I get to travel a lot and check out different areas.
Yeah.
So, the Butterworth, you know, I'd love to do an overnight. I'd like to do two overnights in rapid succession at the Butterworth Mortuary in Seattle. I mean, that's, if you're in the market, the back of it is on Post Alley is Kell's Bar, it's Kell's Tavern.
Right, Kell's, yeah.
Yeah, and what happens, a lot of people don't realize it, that you go from Kell's Tavern, you walk towards 4th Street, and there was an elevator that went up to 4th Street. So on the other side, there's a place that's 1921 is the address, and that's where they actually showed the body. So the bodies would come in to where Kell's was, be prepared in the back, and then they'd be put on display on the other street coming up there. A lot of activity there. No business has been able to be successful in the 1921 address. And I thought, well, are the ghosts, and I've asked people, are the ghosts chasing your people away? And they said, no, you just can't turn a profit when your glassware flies off the shelves and bottles of wine go throwing across the room and shatter on the far side. Because it's product damage, and it's a financial thing, and that's why the guys can't make a profit there. But that's a really good one. And if you look at Kell's Tavern, up on the top, on the brick wall, up at the very top, you can still see the faded out letters where it says Butterworth Mortuary, which was the first mortuary here in Seattle.
So are there any places here locally, or at least in the Pacific Northwest, that you think that are either overrated or that people just have the legend wrong?
Yeah, I think Manresa Castle falls into that category.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
It's a delightful place to stay, but there's so many different stories. You know, there's a priest that hanged himself up in the attic, and then we find out that there wasn't a priest that hanged himself, and, you know, things happen in the bar room, but then the bartender says, yeah, he made all that stuff up, and then later on he says, no, I lied when I said I made that stuff up. There's so much stuff that's floating back and forth, and I think part of that goes along with the ownership of the Manresa, where you might have someone, yes, we're ghost friendly, there's something going on here, the next people come in and say, I don't want to scare away my guests, so I'm going to say there's nothing here. And then it goes back and forth. And we've had people up there stay at the Palace Hotel, which is about a mile away from the Manresa, and we had another group that stayed at the Manresa, and we got a lot more activity down at the Palace than we did up at the Manresa. We got some activity up at the Manresa, some anomalous readings and things that we couldn't understand, like the if you go in the front area there in the lobby, there's an old grandfather's clock, and we heard that stuff. We recorded that thing going off, and we were talking to the guys, and he said, yeah, that thing's been, that thing, there's no works in it. I said, what? And we opened up this. There's nothing on the inside. It's just for looks. And yet our investigators were like, we heard a chime last night. And the guy said, yeah, that's one of the stories. We're not sure what that is. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I find that, you know, a lot of the stuff that you read on Shadowlands and sites like that is rather inaccurate. So the fact that you've done this Pacific Northwest Haunts, which I have on my bookshelf, by the way, signed by the author, I think is just a really great thing for people. Now, the other thing is you're doing the hotel book. And I wanted to know about McMenamins because, of course, as you know, the McMenamins, which is a brew pub and hotel empire around here, mostly in Oregon and southwestern Washington, they have a real reputation for buying places that are haunted. Now, do you think that that's marketing hype, or do you think that there's something to some of the McMenamins?
I don't think that they buy them because they're haunted. I think that the McMenamins really want to do historical stuff, keep history alive, and they don't want to see these buildings destroyed. And so when they buy them and they discover that there's some activity there, they don't hide it. Like I said, when you talk to the Hilton chain and say, hey, is this place haunted? And they say, absolutely not. Because
right.
baseball teams are very, very superstitious. And they don't want to stay in a haunted hotel the night before they're playing a baseball game. And one of the teams checked out. And the you know, baseball teams will sign out the entire floor, like the seventh floor. And so they'll just check out. And so that's why they're there, because McMenamins, they don't have that problem. So they can say, hey, you know, come in. If you find anything, let us know. They're a little bit more eager to do that.
And so yeah.
Hotels,
I always ask people, when you're looking at hotels, find the ones that have the 13th floor. A lot of them don't. The 13th floor is missing.
Right.
And that's what one of the things I like to do with my granddaughters is get in the elevator. It's okay, hit all the buttons, and they'll hit all the buttons, and then we'll stop at every floor. I said, now hit the 13th floor, and they'll look at it, and it's not there. There's also not a 13th row in a lot of airplanes. They just won't put the 13th row in there because people don't want it. So you go from 12 to 14. I said, well, what's so bad about 13?
So, are you going to have the Heathman down in Portland in your book?
That's the one that doesn't have a 13th floor.
Oh, it doesn't.
But the interesting thing is, when you get past the front elevator and get on the service staircase, you can find a 13th floor. There is a 13th floor, but you can't get there by elevator.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You need to spend some time in the Heathman and just kind of walk around and check, and that's... I'm sure that my name's just a bad name for the security people. What are they doing now? Are we looking for vampires or ghosts?
Well, we have an inn at the Heathman because Rob St. Helen is who is one of the night people at the Heathman is a columnist for our magazine.
He writes perfect.
Yeah, he writes about the Heathman on a monthly basis. So
that's good.
Yeah, so I'll have to ask him about the whole 13th floor thing. So is the 13th floor, is it like, are there guest suites on that floor, or?
You know, there were rooms, but naturally I couldn't get in there. So I didn't know if they were living quarters, if they were using them for storage. And I kind of stumbled on it because I took the elevator. Well, okay, there's 12 and 14. Then I went back and it was like, well, wait a minute. And so I went down the stairs and I opened up the door. And I froze in my tracks because right in front of me, there's a little sign that says 13th floor. And I'm like, wait a minute. And then I tried to find the elevator, and there was no elevator there. And I thought, oh, great. Joe Teeples had just gone into the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, that's kind of freaky.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, I haven't been down there, but I keep telling Rob I'm going to take him up on his offer because he's you know, said you need to come down and stay. And so I definitely need to do that because I've heard some pretty interesting things about the Heathman. And not only that, but I hear that, you know, some one of my favorite people in the world, Eddie Vedder, stays there. So it's all good.
Yeah, and absolutely. There's a lot of good places to check out down in that area.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm looking forward to the hotels book. So so if I'm traveling to, well, Los Angeles is too easy. So in your book, are there in most major cities, are there good haunted places to stay?
I try to put the haunted places. My goal was that no one would have to drive more than 4 or 5 hours to find a haunted hotel that they can stay at. So if you have the haunted hotel book, you should be able to map your route and say, okay, this is where I'm going to go. I'm going to go check these places out.
So that's coming soon. Does it have a title or just a working title right now, Joe?
Working title is Haunted Hotels. It'll be published by Schiffer. The publisher is already on me, and so we're ready to go, and they want to do it. I want to do this. It's going to be the same style as Pacific Northwest Haunts, except this one's going to go coast to coast.
Oh, I'm excited about that, yeah.
And then we got... Oh, haunted campgrounds would be good too. I think haunted restaurants would be good too. I've started dabbling around with us. So when you get, you know, because I'm thinking ghost hunters have to sleep and they have to eat. So they're looking at that. Now, another thing that is kind of interesting that the listeners might be interested in is Black Wolf Paranormal. We've been talking about making an end run. We would like to end up in October down at Disneyland to experience the Halloween decor down at Disneyland. And so we're thinking, well, it'd be great if we just drove down there and stopped at places across the way, the Queen Mary, the Winchester House down in California.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I've got some, you know, like the Heathman over in Portland, and actually do that and just take a week doing that And so we said, well, why don't we do that? And what we'll do is we'll just let people know where we're going. Rather than have a tour where people can spend $300 and sign up for a tour, how about just announcing where we're going to be? Hey, October 13th, we're going to be at the Ocean Liner down in Long Beach, the Queen Mary. And, you know, if you want to join us, join us. You know, make your own room reservations and things like that. The nice thing about the Queen Mary is that if you do an overnight, because it is a hotel, if you do an overnight at 10 o'clock, they kick all the tourists out. And then because it's your room, you have free reign. You can go down to the engine room. You can be down there at 2 o'clock in the morning looking for the EVP at the door where the door sealed shut and the guy almost made it out and cut him in half. The EVP of the guy screaming, and it wasn't there when they were there, but they got it all on EVP. So it really is. There's one room there they will not rent out. It is too haunted. And they put cameras in there and left it. And during the middle of the night, at 2 o'clock in the morning, you could see the sheets being pulled off the bed in that room. There's so much trauma in that room. They said, no, we're not going to do that. So that's kind of like a free tour. And that, you know, we're going to talk more about that at Crypticon, Haunted for Hope. We're going to talk about it there. And it's Black Wolf Paranormal that's working. Now, we're working on the details, trying to figure out where we want to stay.
That's very cool. That sounds very like cool. A lot of fun too. And you know, what better group of people to spend it with than a bunch of ghosty people, right?
Absolutely. Ghosties are fun.
Yeah, you know, the paranormal community is absolutely amazing. And we have, as you can tell listening to Joe and some of the people we've had on the show in the past couple of weeks, that we have a pretty vibrant paranormal community here in the Pacific Northwest, and particularly I would say in western Washington and western Oregon. And you can do that, too, in your area, and I think it's a great idea. I've gotten nothing but good things out of it. How about you, Joe?
I think it's been a lot of fun, and I've only been in the Pacific Northwest for about the last 10 years, and I was fortunate to bump into a lot of good people who really they're passionate about this stuff, and they're willing to share the knowledge that they have. And I think that's one of the nicest things about the Pacific Northwest. Some of the other parts of the country, I've seen people play the old, I've got a secret and I'm not going to tell you this stuff. But over here, it's like, hey, what about the Menorah? And he goes, oh, if you're there on Thursday night, you'll see, you know, someone walk in the hallways. And it's, well, that's not on anyone knows. Now, you won't see that on the website, but that's where you want to be. So they really do talk about some good stuff, frankly.
Yeah, and they're welcoming, and they're welcoming to new groups because you want to help them get it right.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Because anybody who enters the paranormal reflects on all of us already here.
Yes.
Absolutely. And that's why I wrote Pacific Northwest Haunts and Ghostology 101. I was trying to document it so that if something happened, someone else could pick up the torch and run with it. I was working with one group here in Seattle that was very, very good. As a matter of fact, they had videotapes on their website of shadow people that I was messing with my camera and I couldn't get the thing to work. It was malfunctioning. And a shadow person came in around the corner from the top, and she got it on film. I was totally oblivious to this whole thing. And he came in, looked directly at me, and then backed out of the room. And so I don't know if I scared it or if he knew there was this camera, but it was evidence there. A lot of other stuff in the Harvard Theater, we got orbs and partial apparitions floating around in that place, green lights and slime and all kinds of neat stuff. She had it on her website. And then after a while, people started complaining, but giving her a hard time, and all of a sudden she pulled the plug. And so all that information is gone, and no one can build on it ever again.
And the other thing is that a lot of places like the Harvard Exit Theater aren't open to groups anymore, or, you know, not very often anyway. And so that's why I appreciate what you do and what other people do in this community, is that there's an investment in bringing new people in and helping them to get it right so that we don't get kicked out of places that we like.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We need to be able to develop this. And I've seen some organizations that have kind of isolated an area and said, well, this is our Hill Hotel. I've been there. It was like I'm writing a book, and the guy's, well, I only let X, Y, and Z group in here because I trust them. I said, well, can you tell me what's going on? I said, no. And I'd go to X, Y, and Z group, and they said, no, we're not going to tell you. That's our little stomping grounds. And I said, are you going to publish anything? Are you going to put it out there? Well, no. We just go in there. I said, so basically, you're just running the haunted mansion at Disneyland. Your little private club, and you're going. It's the Goosebumps Club, and I told this woman, I said, "You're pretty despicable." And I said, "I think that's terrible that you know you've got this information. Do you mean to say that if you had a full bodied apparition that came on and said, 'Here's the secret to life'?" And she said, "No, that's for our group only. We would not be able to share that with anyone."
But what's that's a shame. Yeah, I think that you have to share it, because I think that the more people share it, the more the conversation opens up. And that's why we're able to have that's why people will, when they find out what I do now, tell me, "Hey, I've seen a ghost," or "I've had this experience." And why we have so many people who aren't members of the established paranormal community show up at things like Haunting for Hope and you know, all of the places that we show up and speak. I've met, when we were at Port Gamble here back in October, I think it was, I met all sorts of people that had never really had anything to do with paranormal before, but were there just out of curiosity.
Yeah, a lot of people just want to know, and I've talked to a lot of people that came up and they said, "You know, I've seen things, I've experienced stuff. My husband thinks I'm nuts, or my wife thinks I'm nuts."
But my wife just thinks I'm a gigantic nerd.
You are.
Well, I'm just a geek, you know. So they're looking for someone that they can do some research on and figure it out. And my feeling is that if you've got an organization and we're researching this, and we call ourselves researchers, and it's very difficult to call yourself a professional because there's no organization, there's no certification or anything like that.
Right.
But for a researcher, you have to publish your works, and you need to get it out there with the intent that other people can build on that. And if the group's not doing that, then my question is, is this just a haunted ride that you're talking about? Meet us on Saturday, we're going to go through the cemetery with a bunch of tape players, and you know, are you there? What's your name? And I talked to one EVP person, and I said, "Well, you know, you're doing this stuff all the time." And she said, "Yeah, I was on one hunt, and the ghosts weren't talking." And then finally the ghost came through and said, "Are you going to stay here tomorrow?"
That's such an incredibly common thing, though, I find, that, you know, you may go there one time and absolutely nothing's going on, and then the next time you go, spend a little bit extra time, and you walk away with 50 EVPs and a couple of great photographs.
Well, that's right. And look at it from the ghost point of view. We want these people to communicate to us, and once every 3 months we show up at the Heathman. And
right.
And it could be one of those ghosts. "I have a story to tell. I need to get this message across. And are you there? If you're here, close the door. Turn the light. Can you hear me? What's your name? Hey, idiot, I told you my name last week. I want you to get a message to my wife." You know.
I know. Don't even get me started on stupid EVP questions. Yeah. I think that's part of the value in having a place that you return to on a regular basis is that, well, two things. First of all, you can start to get some repeatable phenomena, as I have up at Wellington and as we have here at the Lewis County Museum. And the other thing is that if you establish that relationship, you may learn some things that they need to share.
That's right. That's right. And get to talk to the people who have experienced it. Talk to the park rangers up in Wellington. Talk to the gal that danced with Oscar over at the Port Hadlock Museum, that type of stuff. And that's one of the things we're hoping to do as more people join in and join this party, so to speak. And, for example, the group that's, we're going to leave Seattle and head down to Disneyland. Yeah, it's going to be a joyride on the very last couple of days. Well, we're going to stop and really talk to some people, and I'm hoping people will come out of the woodwork. And we're going to leave here on September 30th. So that's the week if people want to pencil that in and say, "Hey, you know, Black Wolf Paranormal Road Trip," and we're just calling it the Ghost Road Trip for lack of anything else, trying to flesh something out. And maybe we'll stay in at the Heathman for the first night, then head on down. There's a really nice haunted area that, and they say, well, we're not haunted, but the story was, a couple of people were in the state park or the federal park right next to it, and they were chased back to the rooms by vampires. And then when the guy woke up in the morning, he was bleeding from the neck. And so, is there any truth to that? I said, "Oh, of course not." But as I walked through the hotel and looked at it, every room had a Bible prominently displayed on the table.
Wow. So, Joe, do you have a website?
I do not have a website, no.
Okay.
Well, I do, but it's a safety website that'll teach you how to, you know, how to wear personal protective equipment correctly, and that's pretty boring for this show.
Yeah, I suppose it could be hazardous. Well, I work at home in my chair. I commute down the hall, and I did break a bottle of vitamin pills this morning on the floor. But I'm happy to admit that I'm happy to tell you I did not get cut. So I must have followed some good safety procedures in my workplace. Yeah.
And the listeners can also they can friend me on Facebook. If they go to Facebook, look for Joe Teeples. What I've been trying to do, and my goal in the next year is to put most of the stuff, photographs, information stuff, on the website on Facebook, so people can share it that way.
Good, that's a great way of doing it. And then they can also go to Amazon.com and just enter your name, Joe Teeples. It's T-E-E-P-L-E-S. And they can find your vampire book, which I have not yet read yet, but I want to. And they can find your Pacific Northwest Haunts. I don't think they can find Ghostology 101 because that was just privately written for a group. Is that right?
No, Ghostology 101 is available through Amazon.com.
Oh, okay. Ghostology 101. So they can find all of that about you or friend you on Facebook. Hey, Joe, this has been absolutely... Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, this has been absolutely fun. I love listening to you tell stories. So I think that you missed your calling, and you should just be a storyteller who travels from in a different time. That's what you would have been as a storyteller, I think.
That's what I was going to do when I got off the pleasure barge, but I never made it.
Okay, so Joe, thank you so much for coming
on here.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. The book is Pacific Northwest Haunts, and he has another one coming out about haunted hotels. So watch for that, and we'll try to announce it here on the show when it comes out too, Joe. So just let me know when it's out.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Joe. Good night.
Good night.
Okay, and there he goes, you guys. Joe Teeples. He's an interesting guy to hear talk at any of the conferences. He's, like I say, he's kind of a born storyteller, and he always draws in his audience and does a great job. The last time I heard him speak, he spoke about the cemetery, the Comet Lodge Cemetery in Seattle, which is why I wanted to ask him about it, because it's just a really interesting story to me what, you know, we do to our cemeteries.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, another thing that he was talking about that I really liked was, you know, bringing everybody together and trying to learn from each other rather than, well, my way's right, your way's wrong. I mean, even if you don't believe in psychics and or you do believe in psychics, you can still come together and try and learn something in that aspect.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with you. And that's one of the things, like I say, that I appreciate about the Pacific Northwest. And we've been bringing on those Pacific Northwest people the past couple of weeks just because that's the way it wound up being scheduled, not because it's like, you know, Pacific Northwest month on Paranormal Underground Radio or anything. And it's been really good. We've had some good conversations with them, and I think we have one more coming up. Rochelle Wright in a few. When's she, Cheryl?
February 2nd, Rochelle will join us.
That's right, and that's the one that Rick can't be here for, which is is too bad, because it's going to be an interesting conversation, because she's not a paranormal person. What she does is something called, it's like guided after-death communication or something like that. It's a form of psychotherapy that she's developed, so it's really fascinating. Okay, so Cheryl?
Yes.
Next week?
Next week, January 26th, I think it is, we have Jeff Grunow joining us for another discussion about the Great American Phenomena Hunt, TGAF, as they are known.
Yeah, they got a lot going on right now that's going to be really interesting.
Cool. I'm looking. And so has he saved his announcement for us since we missed him the last time? Rick?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, this is kind of like a mulligan, I guess, for the both of us. And, you know, he'll make an announcement again. So what we'll need to do is we'll probably just need to, you know, send him over another banner so he can put it on his website.
Okay, and let's see. So Jeff is next week, and then the following week is going to be Rochelle.
Rochelle.
And then who's after her?
Thomas Fusco, author of Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality.
Oh, right. Mm. The one that's going to freak me out.
Yes.
Reality.
No.
The one that's going to make sure that I don't sleep for months and months
and
months.
Actually, that's not the one, but he may also freak you out.
Okay, who's the one that's going to freak me out?
It's Nigel. Very, Nigel Kerner. Mm. He, if you read the last issue of Paranormal Underground, it was our December issue. He wrote a guest editorial, and if you haven't read it, go to paranormalunderground.net, click on the cover of the magazine on the homepage, and you can read it for free. It's an interesting take on pretty much on the UFO extraterrestrial phenomenon, and he's got some interesting theories about what 2012 really is about and what
zombie
extraterrestrial.
Are we all gonna die?
No, I don't think so. I don't think we're all going to die. It's basically a theory about extraterrestrial. What their purpose is here, as far as the abduction phenomenon is. There I'm not going to give it
hey,
away, but
you know,
you'd want to tune into the radio show.
I think the story that we need to do for the magazine, but not me, mm-hmm. is maybe Rick, because he seems mm-hmm. to like these places, is what Joe was talking about. Have somebody go to some of those vampire bars and write about it.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, Rick.
Oh. That,
yeah,
you know, Rick, we volunteer you.
Well, the vampire bars are really kind of interesting. I used to be really heavily into the goth thing, and like I was talking about, there was a place here called Exit, and I used to go there quite a bit, and man, you'd see people walking around sporting silver jewelry, of course, which was really big with the goth thing, but they had these surgically implanted fangs that they got from their orthodontist, and you do get to kind of talk to these people a little bit, and you find out that they do have families, and they do they have regular jobs. Like I was talking to one guy, he was actually an accountant, so his life is pretty boring during the day, but at night he's playing Count Dracula. But you know, as far as there being like, you know, real immortal vampires, it looks great on paper. But when you go back and you look at a lot of the folklore, the vampires are actually a little bit more akin to zombies. They're not the attractive guys who don't wash their hair or wear you know, evening wear. They're actually.
Oh, he admits it, Cheryl. He thinks he's attractive. Did you just hear Rick call Edward attractive?
I'm saying, like, with our whole idea of vampires now, you know, the real actual vampires.
The glitter and daylight guys.
is nothing more than a walking corpse. That's all it is.
Well, see, I don't think I could go to a vampire bar, but what I know I could do is I could dress up as a zombie and dance the Thriller dance. I could do that with you, Karen, too.
I'll do that.
Okay.
Let's do that together.
Yeah, okay, see, there you go. Cheryl and I, next time we see each other, we'll both be dressed as zombies, and we will do the Thriller dance.
Videotape it for me. I got to see that.
There you go. Okay, and do we have an upcoming issue of the magazine, or are we a few weeks away, or what's the deal?
We have an upcoming issue. Our goal is to get that issue online for everybody to read by next weekend.
Yay!
And, I have no further details.
Okay, that sounds very good.
Sounds appealing, doesn't it?
Yeah, I want to remind everybody again that's here in the Pacific Northwest, if they would like to, that there is this opportunity coming up on the 28th at the Klondike, which is just a really great place. And so you can go to, I think it's Paranormal Insights. Just if you search Paranormal Insights, I think it's paranormalinsights.net. You go to paranormalinsights.net. William has information up about that, and it will be a fabulous, exciting thing. And anything else, anybody?
I have nothing.
You have nothing.
Okay. I have nothing. Can you believe it?
I really can't believe it. Do you have anything, Cheryl?
I have not a whole lot. I'm watching Paranormal Underground and about Paranormal Underground. We have a TV show now, by the way.
American Idol.
I meant to say American Idol.
Yeah, you notice if Cheryl has a TV show, Rick and I are not on it because we have faces made for radio.
Yeah. Not attractive.
In my case, anyways.
Come on.
The best we've looked in our life is in our publicity photo for the radio show.
Yeah.
It's true, sorry. And the publicity photo for my book. So, okay, thanks to our guest, Joe Teeples.
Yeah, definitely.
You can friend him on Facebook. It's TEEPLES. You can look him up on Amazon. If you're into vampires, the vampire book is very cool. And North Pacific Northwest Haunts is actually a great guidebook. I've read through it. I've been to a lot of the places, and Joe knows his stuff. So that's everything. Until next week. Next week we'll be back with, I forgot. Who did you say the guest was, Cheryl?
Jeff Grunow.
Oh, with Jeff, I'm having a senior moment with Jeff Grunau.
Karen
next
calls
week,
him. What do you call him? The sheriff? Or
I have so many senior moments, and unfortunately, they usually occur when I'm either speaking or on the radio. So there you go.
For our entertainment, thank you.
Yeah, it just is what it is. My family has just learned to, you know, laugh at me behind my back and roll their eyes. Anywho, so next week, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern.
After all these years, you'd think you'd have it down.
No, after all the time I say this and other times in the flyover states. That's right. Thanks for listening to Paranormal Underground Radio on ZTalk Radio. See you next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Good night.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the ZTalk Radio Network.